I'm Lisa. This is Keeping It Real. Our guest today is the incredibly cool Jennifer Parrish Taylor of the Urban League of Portland. She's part of the team advocating for ranked choice voting on the Oregon ballot this cycle, State Measure 117. You can learn more online about that at OregonRCV.org. Election Day, of course, is Tuesday, November 5th. And I'm going to be right back with Jennifer. Here we are. We are here. And Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you.
Can you start by telling our listeners about the Urban League, and specifically the Urban League of Portland, National Civil Rights Organization, historic organization with local chapters? And the Urban League of Portland is a very important one. So what do y'all do?
Absolutely. The Urban League of Portland, which is led by our president and CEO, Nkengi Harmon Johnson, is a key civil rights and advocacy organization that focuses on empowering African Americans and other underserved communities in Oregon and Southwest Washington. As you mentioned, we're one of the oldest civil rights organizations in the state. We were established in 1945, which means we're coming up on our 80th anniversary. And so we're one of the oldest affiliates of the National Urban League, which is a nationwide civil rights organization, as you mentioned. So the Urban League of Portland here works to achieve economic empowerment, equality, and social justice through a range of services and programs. This includes job training, workforce development, housing assistance, health and wellness programs, youth services, and advocacy efforts. We really do it all. But we also engage in public policy advocacy, focusing on issues like affordable housing, police reform, education equity, healthcare access, and economic development for marginalized communities. And our work emphasizes closing gaps in education, employment, and wealth, as well as promoting policies that dismantle systemic racism and advance civil rights. And so the organization serves as a bridge between the community and policymakers, and it's deeply involved in civic engagement and voter empowerment efforts.
Yeah, I'm coming over here to say that actually the Urban League of Portland's candidate forums set the standard in our region in the past. I haven't followed every single one this time, but on their website, ulpdx.org, look for that. It's called the Meet the Candidate. It's called Meet the Candidates 2024. And in the past, the Urban League has literally interviewed, had forums with every single candidate in all of the local metro areas. And so if you live in Tualatin, the Ham, you know, Gresham, what have you, you definitely need to go over there and check that out. I don't think you guys get enough credit for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I will mention that we do have statewide races there as well. We've done a couple of those. And so, you know, we really see it as one of the platforms where our community can come and hear from candidates directly. And we ask them some pretty direct questions.
It's not a softball experience at
exactly
all.
No.
And just to finish that hoop, just to close that hoop, the Urban League of Portland actually partners with a lot of local organizations to
Absolutely.
Make that happen. Can you talk about that a little bit? Why is that even important?
Yeah, so you know, it's important to us because we often have the capacity to put on these kinds of events. And some of our smaller partners who, you know, definitely share our values and share in doing the work, you know, utilize it as a tool. And so often, you know, we go to them, we ask them like, hey, are there questions you want to ask candidates that your communities have been thinking about? So some of our partners are like the Muslim Educational Trust. We've worked with Kairos PDX, SEI, Apano.
So those are all youth organizations, but and then Apana working with different communities, immigrant communities.
Exactly. Because, you know, it's important that though we serve or center rather Black Oregonians, we do recognize that, you know, we have to work together and that really, you know, our freedoms and our liberation and social justice are tied together. And so just because I may not be an immigrant, I do care about the conditions of farm workers, for example. And so, you know, these have been partnerships that we've had for decades. And we just continue to build upon those relationships and really utilize these opportunities as a way to further those relationships and really introduce our folks to other communities that may share the same values.
Yeah, and I would not be an adequate interviewer of someone from the Urban League if I failed to shout out the senior services programs that you guys do. They, again, are models. So coming back to this election stuff, shifting gears back towards Measure 117, which is the ranked choice voting measure at the state level. Can you lay out what that measure would do if it was passed?
Yeah, absolutely. So Measure 117, again, that's Measure 117 for folks who are filling out their ballots, gives voters the option to rank candidates in statewide and federal races in both the primary and the general. It also gives local governments a roadmap to adopt ranked choice voting so election officials don't have to reinvent the wheel. And lastly, Measure 117 requires a robust statewide voter education campaign to ensure successful use by all voters and communities across Oregon. And this includes voter education in Oregon's top five languages outside of English. But I think more importantly, especially for Black Oregonians and other Oregonians of color, it really provides an opportunity to, I think, dream about the kind of community and democracy we want to see. I think often voters of color have to make pragmatic choices between candidates that may not necessarily reflect their values and are forced to really make some hard choices. And I think we often don't get to dream in the ways that our white counterparts do because a lot of choices are foreclosed to us. And so ranked choice voting really is rooted in ranking your preference. Like, you don't even have to vote for someone you don't like. It's strictly about who are you jazzed about? Who are you excited about? Who's going to build the vision and the community you want to see, and who's going to effectuate those changes that you want to see. And it really provides an opportunity for community members to see themselves in the government that serves them.
I wanted to come back over here and read a little bit about the history of ranked choice voting. This is from the rcvresources.org website, which is a website that helps people all over the country who are interested in ranked choice voting. But ranked choice voting was invented in the 1850s in Europe as a proportional representation system used in multi-winner elections. In the 1870s, it was adapted to the single winner or instant runoff form by William Ware, an MIT professor. After trial runs in the 1850s in Denmark, RCV was used regularly in elections beginning in the late 1800s and early 1900s, when states in Australia began adopting the method for their legislative elections. Later, the single winner form was adopted for Australia's House of Representatives elections in 1918, and the multi-winner form was adopted for Australia's Senate in 1948. Malta and the Republic of Ireland adopted the multi-winner version for their parliamentary elections in 1921. Ireland also uses the single-winner instant runoff form for some elections, such as president. Around the same time RCV was adopted in Australia, cities in the United States began adopting RCV in earnest. Ashtabula, Ohio became the first place in the United States to use RCV in 1915. Using it to elect its city council. It spread to the rest of Ohio and across the country to places like Boulder, Colorado, Kalamazoo, Michigan, Sacramento, California, and West Hartford, Connecticut. New York City adopted the multi-winner form of ranked choice voting for their city council and school board elections in 1936, spurring another 11 cities to adopt ranked choice voting. I'm going to stop here. I'm gonna suggest that people listening now might have some homework to do. And there's a lot of information about this in multiple languages, too, by the way, if you can do a web search of multiple languages. And Jennifer, I want to take this slight digression that I have taken here about RCV, the history of RCV, to ask you, what's the history of you? How did you come to this work?
Yeah, so I am from Portland. I grew up in Northeast Portland and went to school on the East Coast.
You went to college on the East Coast.
I did. I went to Smith College and really became I think lack of a better phrase, radicalized in terms of getting involved with student organizing. We had experienced some racially motivated actions on campus. And so a lot of us got together and organized sit-ins, really brought the administration to heel to say, what are you going to do? How are you going to make this place more inviting for students that look like us? And so really that became my lodestar in terms of the work that I do professionally. And so I've been organizing, working in movement building spaces tied to social justice and racial justice for close to two decades. I was working in DC for the Peace Corps as a member of the Obama administration, having worked on his campaign for quite a while, his first one. I'm always proud of that. And so I just really got tired of living in DC and answering the question of like, well, who do you work for? And it really was a question more so of, you know, how can you help me, and it being very transactional. And I just remembered growing up in Portland and the sense of community I had growing up, and I really wanted to come back to that. So I came back. My mom at the time was still here in Portland, and I started working for labor unions, other nonprofits, and then had an opportunity to come to the Urban League of Portland, and have been doing this work for a little over 3 years. And for me, you know, I view voting and ranked choice voting as a social justice issue. And for context, like, my dad was 18 when the Voting Rights Act was passed. And then we had a little less than 50 years of enfranchisement. And then when it was struck down by Shelby V. Holder. And so when I hear folks talk about, you know, well, why should I vote, or this is overly complicated, I feel like that's disingenuous. And I feel also like, how dare I not vote, knowing that folks that look like me fought so hard for me to be able to do that and to be in this space and to exercise and vote for my values and vote on issues that are important to my community that would make a material change in their lives. And so I take this personally, and I just, you know, get up every day and work with a team and work for an organization that really is trying to get Black folks and other folks to liberation. And what does that look like? And how do we do that together? And how do we work across differences and really see that, you know, the liberation of Black folks is the liberation of all people? And, you know, what are the changes that, or what are we willing to do to see the changes we want to have happen?
I want to come back over here and explain Shelby versus Holder, because I'm a nerd. I'm doing it. I know you're listening. I know you want to know what that. No, it's because I'm a nerd. I've got obsessive compulsive disorder. I really do. Shelby County versus Holder is a landmark decision. I'm reading from Wikipedia, because I guess that's who we are as a society now. I'm reading from Shelby County versus Holder is a landmark decision of the Supreme Court of the United States regarding the constitutionality of two provisions of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Section 5, which requires certain states and local governments to obtain federal preclearance before implementing any changes in their voting laws or practices. And those pre-states were ones that were figured out to be the most discriminating states. And we can rabbit hole on that a little bit later. And Section 4, which contains the coverage formula that determines which jurisdictions are subject to preclearance based on their histories of racial discrimination in voting. So that was on June 25th, 2013. The Supreme Court ruled by a 5-4 vote that these things were unconstitutional. And so let's get back to this interview. You know, it's interesting when you think about the aspects of what so many people consider to be our democracy, the infrastructure of our democracy. But Alexander Hamilton didn't want too much democracy. And that's why we have the Electoral College, and the Supreme Court also is brakes on democracy. And I'm just putting that out there. So, Jennifer, I know there are shifting gears here. Back to ranked choice voting. There's so much history to this, and there's so much history. Anyway, I know there are different kinds of ranked choice voting. Can you talk about the other cities, counties, and states that use it? And what's your take on Portland's version of it?
Yeah, so, I mean, here in Oregon, we have Benton County, and we have Corvallis that use ranked choice voting now. And so, you know, measure 117 is supported by over 130 endorsing organizations, including the League of Women Voters, the Urban League of Portland, of course, Veterans for All Voters, and Next Up Action Fund, and many more. And the places that have adopted ranked choice voting, more first-time candidates, women, people of color, and young people run for office and win in greater numbers. For example, in New York, which elected its most diverse city council in 2022, featured a majority of women and people of color with the help of ranked choice voting. So we can also look at dozens of places that use ranked choice voting, like the state of Maine, to know that voters of all demographics like it, they understand it, and they prefer it to the current system. So again, I mean, I think it just circles back to what I was saying in terms of it opens up our democracy to everyone, and not just voters, but especially folks who are running for office. It really allows for people who maybe, you know, didn't see themselves being a candidate because they weren't a name brand, they didn't necessarily have the money. They now have a chance because it opens it up to anyone who's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to take a chance. I have something I want to say. I have something that I stand for. I think other folks will support it because I've heard from community that, you know, these are their concerns. And I'm going to raise my hand and I'm going to, you know, go for it. And I think that's exciting. And, you know, the work that we've been doing in community, talking about ranked choice voting, folks are excited. They recognize that they do this already in their everyday lives. You just don't call it
ranked choice. The Academy Awards uses this system.
Exactly. And the other thing is, you know, we, like I said, we do it informally, whether it's, you know, you're going out to eat and you have your first choice of, you know, what you're going to have for dinner. And okay, maybe they ran out. You know, Portland is a food town and folks love to go and eat out. And so it's also difficult to sometimes make a choice around, you know, what are the things I really want to have in this moment? And that's great in that, like I said, it is a ranking of preference. And so if there's something that you just absolutely don't like, then don't have it. Just simply go for what you like and rank it on a scale.
To me, what's interesting about it is that it sort of takes the horse race out of it.
It does. I mean, and I think it really forces folks to, and by folks, I mean candidates, to really think through, okay, what am I running for in terms of values, in terms of a policy framework? And really being clear about that and communicating that to voters versus kind of engaging in the performity of politics and putting on a show that folks might respond to. And I think where we've seen ranked choice voting in other places and where we might see it kind of evolve to here is that I think there might be more collaboration in the future in terms
of... We've already seen it, actually.
Exactly. In terms of like, hey, you know, rank me number one, but rank my colleague number two because we have a platform of shared values and shared ideas. We may have, you know, a different tactics of how we achieve those goals, but, you know, we have similar values. And so I think that's really bringing the process back to one that forces folks to engage and really forces folks to have transparent and direct conversation around, okay, what do you stand for? And like, why should I vote for you? Versus I think, like I said, the performance of why, you know, someone should vote for them.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Jennifer Parrish Taylor of the Urban League of Portland. She's part of the team advocating for ranked choice voting on the Oregon ballot this cycle, Measure 117. It's already been passed and is going to be put in place in the City of Portland elections on November 5th. You can learn more online at OregonRCV.org. Election Day is Tuesday, November 5th. Jennifer, can you talk a little bit about the coalition of organizations and the effort of people who came together to create Oregon RCV, the organization?
Yeah, a lot of us came together during Measure 26-228 to bring ranked choice voting to the City of Portland. And I would say that it was a coalition of a lot of nonprofits representing a bunch of different communities, diverse communities. There you know, were folks representing democracy groups, et cetera. And so when we knew, I would say the Urban League saw the writing on the wall and that this was, you know, going to be passed overwhelmingly, we began our voter education work. Because we have a long history in this country, especially for Black folks, when it comes to voting and the attempts to restrict the right to vote, that there was going to be some anxiety about a change. And so, you know, maybe we didn't have the exact talking points that we have now, but, you know, it was important to us to really get out and talk to folks to say, hey, you know, the election in November is going to be an opportunity for you to use this new form of voting, but also there's going to be a new form of government. And what does that mean? And what does that mean for you? And so, you know, to go from 4 representatives to 12, again, I'm super excited about that. And the fact that folks have to be from the areas that they're serving, like, what a novel idea. And so for us, it's been coordinating with each other on various events, communicating kind of like, what messages are you using? What's working with folks? How do we, you know, need to tweak that as we do this work? But really, I think also too, which has been great, is it's been a good collaboration with the city, because they also recognize that, you know, voter education is going to be super important, has been super important. But more importantly, having the resources available to do that work, and then to trust local community groups to do that education, because they're closest to those communities, and communities trust them, and to get them the resources they need to do it. You know, I can't say enough about the process it's been, and what it's been like working with the city, and them understanding that, like, hey, we're going to have to remix this a little, because you're going to have to talk to seniors slightly differently than you're going to talk to young folks, then you're going to have to talk to immigrant communities, et cetera, et cetera. And so they've been nothing but willing to adapt to the needs of community.
Which department is that in the city?
That is a great question, and I should know this.
I don't mean to throw you a hint, but I'm just curious, because most people that I meet that interact with the city of Portland are not super enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
Some are.
I would have to look it up, so don't misquote me.
No problem. What is your sense of why voters here are resistant to it?
So, you know, I feel, again, like there is a narrative that voters are resistant. I think really what voters are slightly apprehensive and slightly anxious, but I think that is more symptomatic of a national reaction to what's happening with elections. When we have been having our conversations in community with folks, it's not that folks are resistant, it's that this is new. And then when you frame it as like, hey, you kind of already do this already, but it's not called ranked choice voting, it clicks for them. And then they are like, oh, okay, no, this is cool. I can, you know, only vote for the folks that, you know, I really am jazzed about. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly what you can do. And so, you know, folks get excited. They're appreciative of the fact that there's so many organizations out in community doing this kind of education. But I would just caution that, you know, while folks have anxiety right now, just take a beat and take a breath. You know, the city has prepared to do this work. They've done the training with their folks. I personally have a lifelong family friend that she works every election. She's retired, and so this is what she does to be in community. And they've been trained. And so, you know, I would much rather have there be some time in getting results and with the process than for it to be rushed and there be mistakes. And so, again, I just don't think that that is a true reflection, the narrative of, you know, folks are apprehensive, and I just don't think that's real. I think it's something that's being created to, in the hopes that this is a failed experiment.
Or, you know, and you and I chatted about this a little bit in the lobby before we came in here. I feel like I've been clobbered in the face by things that media, large and small, does to get people to pick them up or to go to their website. And I think that the fear of ranked choice voting and all of that is like a clickbait thing. I mean, and it's I don't know that. I haven't done the research, but I've seen that. And we were also talking a little bit in the lobby about we also talked a little bit in the lobby about the failure of the polling industry,
mm-hmm.
and how and there's a lot of discussion about that right now. And the point is that the polling industry has finally come out and admitted to itself, and I'm talking about the corporate polls and the Quinnipiac, which still only polls people by taking random phone calls, which is cute, but it's not adequate. But yeah. There's a sense that the polls cannot reach the people that are not engaged with the political process. And so that's why, I mean, it seems like, you know, and another thing that happens is that people with the strongest opinions, that the people with the loudest voices are the ones that we see leaving, you know, writing comments on the Willamette Week. Fair enough, I do it too. But that's sort of who we hear from. But did I ask you this already? Is there an organized opposition? Did I already ask you that?
I mean, I think there are folks, I don't know how organized they are, that are in opposition to ranked choice voting. And I guess for me personally, I always ask, like, why? Like, why would you be opposed to expanding democracy to folks that formerly didn't see themselves represented? You know, again, I think it is important that folks know and recognize that ranked choice voting happens in a lot of different places already. It is proven, it is tested, and we have a roadmap of how to do this, and we're not flying blind. And so I would just reassure folks that they can trust this process.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Jennifer Parrish Taylor of the Urban League of Portland. She's part of the team advocating for ranked choice voting on the Oregon ballot this cycle, Measure 117. You can learn more online, OregonRCV.org. Election Day is Tuesday, November 5th. What's been the hardest part of the statewide campaign?
I think just time and capacity. You know, we want to talk to as many folks as possible. But, you know, my team in and of itself is three folks. And so, you know, we can't talk to everyone everywhere. And so it's just doing as much as we can, working in partnership with other organizations, and really saying, hey, can you just get your folks together? We will show up. We will talk through what ranked choice voting is. We will answer all the questions, however long it takes. And so, you know, I just think for me personally, I think we started the process a little too slow, and we being, I think, working with the city and working with other organizations, because understandably, they didn't want to confuse folks about their ballots and really wanted to wait until the May elections were done with. But like, we should have been having these conversations as soon as we knew that this was going to be what we were going to be doing this November. And I think folks are, I think voters and community are sophisticated enough that they could have handled the messaging around ranked choice voting and the new form of government while they were voting in May.
You know, and you touched on this a little bit earlier when you talked about, you know, the communities that you've been outreaching with, that you've been meeting with. But I'm just so curious. Urban League is a multiracial organization, but historically it's connected to the African-American community in the United States. And I just want to ask you, like, what are Black voters saying to you about it? Not what questions, but what are they saying? What's the take?
You know, it's mixed. I think there is some of that apprehension in terms of like, okay, what is this thing? And again, once you break it down and really explain it, they're like, oh, okay. And then you have like youth who are super excited and are getting, and like, this is the thing that hooks them into being engaged. And so, you know, I also hear from candidates that are of color, especially Black candidates, that, you know, saw this as an opportunity to run, whether it be for the first time or not, and really saw it as, you know, I actually might have a chance this time now that, you know, we are doing ranked choice voting and it's not a winner take all, meaning you have to have a majority of the votes. And so, you know, again, our communities aren't a monolith and folks have different perspectives around ranked choice voting, but at least in my experience and the folks I'm talking to, folks are curious and they want to know more and they want to practice. And we have like sample ballots that folks can use and to really get comfortable. And, you know, the way that I talk about it is, you know, and I'm going to date myself, is that for anyone who's ever used a Scantron, like, you are used to this. You're used to filling out bubbles and only having, you know, one bubble per ranking, per row and column, et cetera. And so it's just really finding those ways to connect to folks with things that are tangible and that they recognize. And it helps to kind of break through any kind of anxiety they might have about ranked choice voting.
Yesterday, I got to interview Ahlam Osman for City Council. She's 22 years old. She's born and raised in Portland. Her family has deep ties to Somalia. And what, I mean, not to endorse or unendorse any candidate, but it has been a joy for me to meet some of these candidates that nobody really has ever heard of before. Honestly, people have great ideas, and they're, some of them are nutty ideas, I'm going to say that. But Ahlam Osman, 22 years old, she's a small business owner. And the first, when I asked her what was the most important thing that she thought, the most important political issue facing District 4, which is a really weird Frankenstein of a district, but I'm not sure how you make all that work. She just started talking about climate change. She's the only candidate I interviewed who, that was her first response. And the thing is that the incredible Althea Billings, who's the KBOO Evening News Director, she always puts out a survey to our listeners before the big elections. And this year, to find out what's important to the listeners. And this year, climate change was at the top for the first time. And it just fascinated me. I mean, I've interviewed candidates for 40 years. Now I'm dating myself. I should become involved with myself. But seriously, it's rare for me to meet a whole bunch of candidates who really have thoughtful insight and the idea that actually they could be real contenders. And I'm not saying that's bad. I think it's interesting, right?
Yeah, I mean, and just imagine that if we maintained the status quo, we would have missed out on all those great ideas and all of those candidates that come with a different kind of energy that, you know, we haven't seen before. And so, again, that's why I'm excited about this change, is that it just opens up the field and really, again, gives folks. And I think we have, you know, we are blessed with an abundance of talent that is out there and choices. And so, you know, not to endorse anyone or disendorse anyone.
Actually, you can. You can.
We're a see-through organization.
Okay,
so
fair enough.
We can endorse ballot measures, but not individuals. But yeah, I just think the hard part is going to be narrowing down who do you want to vote for.
But see, this cracks me up. This part cracks me up because I lived in Europe for a few years. I came back to Portland, the United States, and I had to get deodorant. I go to the deodorant aisle. I had to leave. I almost started to cry. Like, I forgot. Like,
it's overwhelming.
100 bazillion kinds of deodorant. And yet, deodorant and political leadership are not the same. And one of the things that fascinates me about the current moment is that people are complaining because there's too many candidates. And for myself, I think that in itself is a victory, because I've seen over all of my, you know, my old many years, is that the bigger problem is that fewer people want to run.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that what you said, and I kind of want to ask you a little bit about this, is that ranked choice RCV kind of forces people to pay more attention. It forces them to think about what they want. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, when you have an abundance of candidates who are running, you're going to have to do a little bit more research around what folks are saying on the issues that matter to you. And that's why we have things like our candidate forums.
The Urban League of Portland candidate forums.
Exactly. To provide those opportunities. We truly see them as tools that folks can use when they are preparing to cast their ballots. And it just means you're going to have to dial in. I think having done this work for a while, you know, what I see is I think we as a society have fallen into a mode of expecting that we are customers of democracy, and that it's not a verb in terms of we have to be active in our democracy, which means, yes, we are voting for folks to represent us, but it's our responsibility to hold them accountable to what they said they're going to do. And so, you know, we have an opportunity to set a foundation now with this new form of government to, you know, do the hard work up front to really get some great people into these roles to build toward the community we want to see. And it's going to be incumbent upon all of us to be a part of that implementation and ensure that the vision that we have for our community, who's included in that community, comes to fruition. And so, you know, I've often heard that, you know, folks will get the democracy or government they deserve based upon their participation. And
Bob says that.
I'm a strong proponent of you have to be active. You cannot be passive. And I think in this moment, this kind of zooming out and just thinking nationally about what's going on, we are at a critical moment, and it's going to require all of us to pay attention, to ask the hard questions, and also ask, like, what are we willing to do in this moment to ensure that we, you know, have clean futures, that the planet is still here, that folks can thrive, not just survive. And the list goes on and on. And so I think we have a real moment where we should be engaging conversations, not just with our friends, but with folks that, you know, we may have differences with, to really talk through, okay, what's important to you? And this is what's important to me and why.
Now this is a big question. This is big. Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay. What is your question?
What is your vision for what, if ranked choice voting passes at the state level, what is your vision for what that would do to Oregon state politics?
If it passes at the state level, I mean, I think there's a couple of things we then have to really assess. And, you know, there happens to be a ballot measure on deck, 116, which looks at the pay of legislators. And so, you know, it's not enough to make the system more available, or have the system be a mechanism by which more diverse candidates can engage in politics and be representatives of their communities. We have to be able to pay those folks. And so currently, at least at the statewide level, legislators make, I believe it's $33,000.
It might make someone want to embezzle something. I don't know. I was just thinking out loud.
I mean, when you're receiving close to poverty wages for a job that, you know, I think folks assume is part-time, it's not part-time, it's full-time. As someone that does legislative work, we are in constant communication with folks year-round. And so if we want to have younger folks, if we want to have folks of color, if we want to have women, you know, the list goes on and on, we have to provide an environment that they can subsist, again, like I said, thrive on doing that job alone and not have to have a second or third job or be independently wealthy to represent communities in Oregon.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Jennifer Parrish Taylor. I'm wearing my spare reading glasses, you guys. I know you care. You're listening to me right now. This is like, I already told Jennifer, this is like, it's like driving with your spare tire. Anyway, starting again. This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving, and our guest today is Jennifer Parrish Taylor of the Urban League of Portland. She's part of the team advocating for ranked choice voting on the Oregon ballot this cycle, Measure 117. You can learn more online at OregonRCV.org. Election day is Tuesday, November 5th, and at the end of this hour, we'll talk a little bit more about how you can guard your ballot, make sure that it's counted, and all stuff like that. Jennifer, you've talked to so many people. What surprises you about this campaign, or what people think about how we should vote?
That's a good question. And I don't know if necessarily I've been surprised. I think it's more so I think I've been surprised, not necessarily, like I said, about the resistance about this new form of voting. I think I didn't appreciate necessarily the level of anxiety that is out there. And I don't think that anxiety is necessarily directly just about ranked choice voting. I think it's a more symptomatic of kind of what's going on nationally. I think all of us are, you know, very on edge. And so, you know, when I've been meeting with community, you know, I just remind them that, you know, here in Oregon, we take voting so seriously. And, you know, folks are, our elections folks are so well trained. And there, again, there's been so many resources pumped into in preparation of this process that, like, we can trust that. And that fundamentally, you know, all elections have to be certified, and that's not something new. We've always done that in this state. And that, you know, nationally as well, I think returns are going to be slow, and that I think we just have to prepare ourselves for that and manage our expectations, and that just because they're slow and coming doesn't mean that something nefarious is happening. You know, I think as we are thinking about, you know, how do we ensure that our elections are secure? How do we ensure that, you know, our democracy is secure? You know, we have an opportunity to really let that play out and to trust in the folks that are doing this work, trust that they've been trained and that we will get results. And, you know, we should prepare regardless of what those results are. But locally, I'm excited about what the changes mean for us. And again, you know, we have done RCV in this nation, and we're not flying blind. It's not something that's new. We have a roadmap of how to do this. And folks just need to trust that and trust that, like other states, we can implement it as well.
Jennifer Parrish Taylor, you just referenced local, like you have a lot of excitement and hope for what this is doing locally. And this is another big question. It's maybe kind of complicated, but it's been on my mind a lot. Mm-hmm. In our society, we sort of blur the lines between our local elections and our taxes, too, and federal elections and taxes, right? What is the potential for the future? And we sort of talked about this before. What impact can local ranked choice voting have on the bigger areas around us that don't have it or that are more conservative? That's a weird question, but is it like a little hothouse, or is it like, are we blowing seeds from dandelions that are going to land places? I mean, do you have a sense of that? Just comparing and contrasting, like, local politics, RCV or not, and bigger politics. Like, what's the relation?
Yeah, I mean, I think the relation is that, yes, presidential elections are important, and we need to take that very seriously. But also, local issues often hit folks the hardest. And so I think the through line between both of those is that, again, we have to take this experiment of democracy seriously, and we have to be active in it and cannot be passive. And I think that requires having conversation with folks that, you know, may have different views, because it's easy enough to stay in our echo chambers of like-minded individuals who only say, yes, I agree, or absolutely. It's a lot harder to engage, you know, a family member that is maybe more conservative or more liberal than you over a holiday season or outside of the holiday season to say, hey, you know, really kind of what are your concerns? And really doing, I think, the work to hear folks with intention, you know, respect their viewpoints, but also stand firm when those viewpoints might mean that community is going to be harmed in a material way. You know, I think for me, kind of the bright line is, you know, if the policies you are supporting or the candidates you're supporting mean that I and folks that look like me are going to be physically harmed, then that might not be a bridge that we can bridge together. And so I think we also need to just do the work and start small. I think folks get overwhelmed that, you know, change is going to take a while. But you got to take it one step at a time and one person at a time and have those conversations and really push yourself to be in the discomfort. And ask those hard questions.
It fascinated me as you talk about people need to be active and not passive. And when you had said that people act like we're customers being served by the system, but actually we own it and we sure the hell pay for it. No offense to anybody anywhere. I'd never thought of it that way. That's really interesting. In my network, a lot of people are pushing back on it. As if it should be an instant burger toy meal or it's not effective or something like that. But I don't even trust my take on that because I'm seeing that on Facebook, right? And I was just listening to the most interesting interview with a postdoctoral researcher in decision making on Facebook. And the first thing he said, the most important thing to know is that Facebook is not neutral. Social media is not neutral. It's geared towards freaking you out, whatever that takes. And Facebook especially, it takes time to figure out what freaks you out based on your likes and your responses, and then that serves you that. And that is the truth, and that's fascinating. So, and it leads me to this question. Again, I'm sorry, I ask these big, grandiose, crunchy questions, but I'm a baby boomer. I'm like the last baby boomer. I'm the youngest baby boomer I know, right? They cut it off after I was born. To me, sometimes I feel like my generation was like a plague of locusts on this planet. The baby boomers, me, my sisters, my parents, we consumed so much and created so much pollution that it is damaging the planet. And I'm saying that about the baby boom generation in the United States of America, okay? And there has to be a point when that ends. I mean, it was a bubble. It was a population bubble, and it has to end. And the sense that I have sometimes when I see how RCV is playing out across Oregon, it almost feels like it's a generational shift that is impacting the politics. And I'm not asking you that. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm you know, this is Lisa Loving. I'm pumping up big, grandiose questions here. But do you have a sense of a generational handout? Like pass off or even a generational difference between the people over 60 like me, right, and everybody else? Because sometimes I feel like I keep being told that there's this big gap there. What is your take?
I think that gap is not real, or at least not as so expansive that we can't bridge it. So, you know, what I've been seeing is older folks actually doing the research and like coming to our events with their printouts and saying, you know, I saw this and this and this and this. And it's rooted in facts. Like they've actually done the research and they're doing the work in real time to educate their peers. And then you see younger folks who might know a little bit more, are getting more details, but then they also are talking to their parents about it. And so, you know, again, I think that gap is there, but it's being bridged, and it's not a one-way bridge. It's a two-way in that, again, it's younger folks and peers within those groups having conversations with each other to really get to a place of understanding of the process and what it will look like.
So as I complain about people complaining that they don't want to work so hard to find out what's going on around them, where do you suggest that our listeners could go to find out more about what's on the ballot, what RCV would do, like in general? And you could absolutely, again, take this opportunity to talk about the Urban League forums. But what's the best way for people to be educated about what's on the ballot?
Yeah, you can visit the website for Measure 117. But I also actually would suggest, you know, we have less than 2 weeks until Election Day. And so if you are someone that is supportive of this issue, the best thing that you can do, like I said, is get active and have those conversations with folks in the community. And like this Saturday, for example, October 26th at Peninsula Park, there's going to be a canvassing event that folks can join, and they can check out the social media for Measure 117 to get more details. And, you know, as someone who is an old school organizer and a proponent of doing the work and opening up your homes, you can have house parties, old school house parties, where, you know, yeah, you might have a couple friends that are on the fence. Have a dinner party, invite them over, and have, you know, a good conversation about ranked choice voting, why it's important to you, why you hope that they'll support ballot measure 117, and if they're on board, how they can get involved. So again, you can start small. I don't want folks to feel overwhelmed and what they need to do to effectuate change. So I encourage you to do the due diligence and research on this issue. Look at other states, how they've done it, and make your own decisions around, you know, whether or not you should support this measure. But I hope that you do. And the Urban League of Portland is encouraging folks to vote yes on Measure 117.
I just to close that thought, I am not going to make any calls to action. I'm not allowed to do that here on these beautiful airwaves. But one of the things that I wish would happen, one of the things that I hope happens, that even, you know, my sister was a Trumper, and she died suddenly a couple of years ago, and it devastated my family. Everybody regretted every political argument. I just want to say that over and over again. And so if you have a house party, you have people together, there's going to be people. I just want to, you know, it's not always a good thing to be in an echo chamber. It's not always a good thing to surround yourself with the people who believe exactly what you believe. And I think it would be cool if people could visualize getting together in groups that don't get along or don't feel that they agree with the exact same thing, and somehow in that process reassure each other that we have our backs no matter what. Part of, I think, what's happening here is that emotionally, this stuff is very emotional. There's a lot of people who feel very strongly that their entire lives could be destroyed if one or the other of these presidential candidates win. But I feel like that is kind of feeding to the divide and conquer energy that the country that I was born and raised in has always ringed with, right? So to figure out a way to communicate with each other about what we think politically, but also communicate that we support each other, it's a radical thing. I don't even know how that happens, but I just have to put this up. My nieces, my sister's daughters went to psychics, okay? I know you're listening right now. John Edward, my nieces went to a psychic because they were so heartbroken about all of the conflicts when my sister died suddenly. And so they say from the other side, my sister apologized for being a Trumper arguing with everyone. And I mean, I'm not saying, if you're listening right now, I don't mean to be weird about this. I'm saying that the emotions of this political moment run deep and the stakes are high. And you should consider doing your homework. And okay, Jennifer Parrish Taylor, we're running out of show. What are the most important things that people should know about ranked choice voting measure 117 on the ballot?
I would say the most important thing is, if you make a mistake on your ballot, it can be fixed. I just filled out my ballot last night. There is a test ballot that you can use to practice on. I encourage folks to use that until you are comfortable. I would say, again, this is a ranking of preference. So rank only those folks that you really like. You don't have to vote for anyone you don't want to. Again, I'm not endorsing anyone. And I would just say that we have an opportunity to make our democracy more representative. We have an opportunity to have a process where communities who have previously felt that they do not see themselves in our current form of government have a chance to build a future that sees them, that values them, that centers them. And isn't that exciting?
We're going to get out of here and make space for another fascinating candidate roundtable, part of Running on Air, Althea Billings, the KBOO Evening News series about people specifically running for the city council. This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving.
Thank you for being here, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Thanks to our guest today, Jennifer Parrish Taylor of the Urban League of Portland. She's part of the team advocating for ranked choice voting on the Oregon ballot this cycle. Measures 117. You can learn more online at OregonRCV.org. Election Day is Tuesday, November 5th. You can track your ballot online at sos.oregon.gov/voting-elections. You can find out when your ballot has been counted. You can find out if it's been received. You can get a replacement ballot if it's lost. Ballots are mailed about 2 weeks before the election. If you don't get yours, you can ask for replacement. Do not skip that step. Another resource, the League of Women Voters online resource that breaks loads of information down state by state, is at vote411.org/Oregon. Special thanks to KBOO Public Affairs Director Ender Black and Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. Love you so much, Ender. KBOO Community Radio is open and the airwaves are waiting for you. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.org. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Thanks for listening and stay tuned. Oh no, that was a call to action.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Hello, KBOO listeners. Come join us at the station Friday, November 1st for KBOO's Dia de los Muertos, First Friday Art.